I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. On this episode of The Storyline, Rick Koster continues our conversations with local artists of color. He recently spoke with jazz pianist Jack Madry, who is also pastor at Madry Temple Church, about how rhythm and music seems to imbue much of the world, including the recent Black Lives Matter protests.
To me, music is one of the most therapeutic and healing things in the world. It's always been that way for me. I rely on it in times of happiness and total despair. You, more than anybody, have a perspective of using and relying on music in the church and in maybe the most secular possible place, in a casino. How does music work healing for you from the perspective of those two different places in a time like this? Can you determine and quantify that it helps?
Well, let me tell you this, Rick. Back in 1975, I got married in 1974, but it was in the end of 1973, I came to the religious sector, the spiritual sector of church, and I always loved jazz. So I would like to keep it in that kind of context, whatever I'm speaking of it. And I came to church based on the religion that my mother and father taught me there my whole life. But I came out of depression. Not out of the depression, I was depressed. I went to school, never was involved in anything other than what we do as kids, what we did as kids. And I thought it was all over, man. I just felt like it just wasn't worth living anymore. And I don't know how it happened, what happened. Was it biological? So without getting too deep in this, I came to church, and I always loved music. And music being a part of me, our musician who was statewide known, he was a phenomenal organist and pianist, left. And I got on the piano, and I was at, at that time, I think I was like 23, 24. I had never played a note in my life. But I'm saying this because music was what brought me through with speaking religiously, the Spirit of God in me and what I believe, my faith. But music actually, it brought me out of the depression. I still fight it today, but it took me through that period of time, and it gave me a sense of balance. So I understand the therapeutic message that music not only gives to me, but sends out. And I embraced the concept at the same time. The Bible says he'll make beauty out of ashes. That's what the Bible says. So a situation that was as critical as depression brought me to a place of beauty. But from that point, I had to learn how to play. And that was during a time when the musicians playing in the church were 11, 12, 14. And I was 22, man. I was like an old dude. And I was playing, I only learned like three or four notes. And I took over, and I was ridiculed, I was belittled. Now, this is the religious structure that they expect you to be at a certain point if you're going to play on the piano. You can't just get on there and stop playing. Mary had a little lad. So I decided not only did I want to play, but I wanted to play, and it was kind of a get back at the people that laughed at me. I said, I want to play better than them, so I'm going to study jazz. So, Rick, I had two kids at that time. I was, I got married 3 years later. I had 3 or 4 years later, I had two kids working at EB 8 hours a day, coming home at night. Church was on Tuesday night, 7 to 11. Wednesday night was choir rehearsal, 7 to 11. That was with our other pianist before he left. Thursday night was prayer and Bible band, 7 to 11. Friday night was youth night, 7 to 11. Sunday was 9 to 1:30 and 6 to 11. So I wanted to learn how to play. So I had to learn how to play during that, in a time where it was extremely critical that you don't play that kind of music in our church. So that's the beginning of the story right there. I'll let you, if you have any questions on that, but that was the battle right there. It was the spiritual battle, but it was a battle that came out of going against the norms of the church, but yet understanding out of this particular standard, this religious faith, that I was able. Music is so transferable, but at that time the church is transformative, but the church didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear 13ths and ninths. They didn't want to hear no augmented chords, man. They just wanted to hear. They wanted to hear, you know. But the art of music never forgets its history, and history portrays itself in every form. It's not just church. It's, you know, there's no jazz chord and no R&B chord and a gospel chord. They're all chords. And music will make itself known regardless of what circumstance you are involved in or wanted to play. It's going to make itself known the more you search into it. So, you know, music plays, use the same notes to play, maybe a more extravagant style, but music, Wade in the Water, Nobody Knows the Trouble I Seen, to Ain't No Sunshine When She Gone. It's the same, you know, same note, same music. So I had to learn how to deal with that and take out of the adversity that I faced in being accepted in that form to where I am right now today.
Like, if we go on the homepage of Madre Temple, I'm going to quote you. It says in the little introduction thing, "I encourage everyone to find opportunities to be kind to one another. It's as easy as opening a door for someone and expecting nothing. Not everyone will thank you or offer you a compliment to brighten someone's day." That message, I don't know when you put it up on that board, but man, is that relevant more than ever, if it's even fair to make a comparison. Talk about that attitude as we go through what we're going through in this country right now.
Well, right now, Rick, the churches have to be very careful that they don't become prejudiced because of a religious belief. They have to be very mindful that religion and doctrinal points, you know, we live in a democracy, not a theocracy. So we have to be very mindful that we need to forgive ourselves, and we need to understand that everybody, when I came into the culture, there was a certain culture, there was a certain doctrinal point, there was certain, you acted like everybody else, you kind of dressed like everybody else. In this day and time, when you have so much diversity, so many different the culture is just so diverse, that you have to be careful that you don't isolate, that you make sure you present a feeling of acceptance regardless of who and what you are. Just like the music should be accepted regardless of whether it's swing, jazz, or gospel. It's music, and if you're presenting it for the right person, being a religious person, a spiritual person, if you're presenting it to God and you're doing it in a respectful manner, I'm not telling you to get there and say words that are of a sexual connotation or some kind of curse words, if it's a rap or something. I'm saying if you do everything the Bible says decently in order, we accept whoever walks in that door, regardless of who and what you are. We accept. You come in because you're hurting. You don't want to leave feeling worse than you did when you come in. So it has to be receptive. And everybody might not be like that, but I make sure that I'm like that.
Every Sunday and Wednesday or whenever you guys get together at the temple, can you see that your flock is hurting right now? Or are they empowered right now? Is there hope? Things are changing.
Things are changing. But like I said, out of ashes, the Bible says beauty will come. So I try to promote the positivity. If you try to stretch things out too far, it becomes convoluted. If it becomes convoluted, you open your door up for all kinds of weird kind of thinking and kind of extraterrestrial thinking. You think that the world's going to come to an end, that we're going to be like this forever. And we'll never be able to move ahead if we constantly perpetuate the bad things that's going on. So right now, more than anything, in order to make that change, we need to hope. And hope not in the future, but we need to hope now. So the people in the church, I talk to them, I call mostly many of them that I have their numbers, almost all of them that I have their numbers every couple of weeks. And I just say, well, just check on you, see how you're doing. They post on Facebook, Pastor Jack, thank you so much. Thank you for your concern. We're doing good. You need anything? How's your kids? Do you need, and, you know, here I am, the guy that ain't got no job. But, you know, I was blessed enough to do some things. I'm 65, 66 next month to be able to weather this storm, if you will. But everybody's not like me, and everybody's not like someone else. So I make sure that my voice is heard during dark times to let them know to keep hoping. And everyone that I've talked to have given to me the idea of hope, that it's going to get better. They're willing to understand we have to stay out of church until it's safe. They understand that we empower one another through ourselves and through the spirit within us. And we feed that to the flock, and the flock understands. And they need to understand that we're going to make it through this. I don't want to preach doom and gloom. And we've got enough of that right now. We've got enough of that in the political spectrum. We've got enough of that and everything. We do have to fight. We have to fight for our social reform and equality. We have to fight for that. I'm one that's out there in the streets. I'm marching, doing it. But we must fight with a sense of determination to make sure that we do it the right way. That's all. That we don't want to be insensitive and cause things to be worse than they are. I try to operate in a sense of acceptance. And I hear you if you're willing to hear me.
Do you see a sustained energy in what's happening in terms of the marches for social change and maybe an unparalleled sense of diversity in this sustained energy that goes beyond anything we've ever seen before?
This is so fluid and it's so tenacious, if you will, and I use that in a very appeasing way, that the tenacity that we have now and the unity that we have, not only in America, but I'm talking about not only in 50 states, but I'm talking about the entire world. People in Hong Kong are saying Black Lives Matter. The LGBTQ are marching with the Blacks, with the whites, with the Latinos, with the Asian. They even have children out there. So their voices being heard, and it's constantly moving. It's not stale, and it's changing the culture as it. You know, we need legislation passed, and that's what we're fighting for now. But we see that there's a uniformity in all the voices. We are all speaking the same language. I think this is something like we've never seen before. Not just the pre-protesting era to the civil rights era to this 1964 passing legislation of civil rights, all the way up to the George Floyd and the Breonna Taylor and the Mike Brown and all. This is all of this up to this point now with the Mike Browns, with the George Floyd. This is a movement unlike any other. This is a movement that's going to make things. And I think that's the hope that people have. They see things happening. They see that in legislation that they got to move. They can't just say, well, we're going to get better by and by. We don't want the piece of pie in the sky. We want it now. So we're making that change and we're doing it collectively. And to bring it into a musical form, you know, that's what they did back in the day musically. I think it was who was it? It was the writer, Stanley Crouch, that said the art of jazz. He's saying they were able to because of their musical background, they were able to come together during a very tenuous time. And they were able to come together because they all had the same message during a time. I'm talking about the Miles Davises, the John Coltranes, the Duke Ellington. They were all able to play together because you had to leave your pride at the door. And they were all playing the same note. They were to the same pulse of the. They said he said that they didn't. Their efforts were individual. They believed in what they believed in, which allowed them to play together. And they were one of the biggest acts of civil rights movement was the jazz movement. They were one of the biggest acts. So this is like a big jazz movement right now. I mean, people are coming together of all colors and standing against the face of racism. And they're doing it in such a collective force that it's so powerful that things have to change. Government has to change. Laws have to change. Legislation have. Black lives do have to matter. And I just use the little music scenario because, I mean, if you look at if you look at Duke Ellington wouldn't play in a segregated, he wouldn't play to a segregated audience. You know, Miles Davis got beat up by the police. He fought for in the black power movement, and they fought the NAACP. I mean, who else? Charles Mingus wrote the Fable of Fabot about the Jim Crow era. I mean, all of these things that came together. Benny Goodman hired Teddy Wilson, one of my favorite pianists during a time when there was segregation in the music field. So I'm saying that they did it then, and we're doing it right now, but at a greater force. I'm sorry to go off on that, but that's what inspires me to see that they did it before. We're doing this again. We're making this transition, but with such a more powerful voice and such a sense of unity and diversity.
Arts has a huge role to play in what we're doing and how we're going forward, not just as artists observing and reacting, but also providing stimulation and intellectual entertainment.
Music has its own. Music is the arithmetic of life. It is the ABC of life. It is the pulse of a general. The world marches to a beat, and that's why I use it always marches to the protest. If you think about it, and I think about music, they're marching to a beat. When I'm looking at them, the music gives us that beat, and the music will always transcend. Like what happened with George Floyd, the music will transcend the incident because music will make the writer write, it'll make the singer sing, it'll write the songs for the singer, it'll write the poetry for the poet, it'll write the sermon for the minister. It dictates. It always controls everything. The whole contents of nature in the world. Everything marches to a beat. Miles Davis wrote Kind of Blue during a time of racial unrest, and that was one of the greatest. So music transcends the time, and music will find its way to represent even the most heinous tragedies. Out of George Floyd's death, out of Breonna Taylor's death, out of Michael Brown's death, out of all of their deaths, Trayvon Martin, music, poetry, plays, different kind of entertainment, if you will, to relive what happened, and will be created by these artists because of the rhythm of life that surrounds these heinous acts will perpetuate people to, and I always use the language of jazz to express it, and every person that expresses it differently. And they're able to enrich it, they're able to empower it, they're able to just describe it in their own words. So it lives forever, just like the songs you were talking about, Mahalia Jackson. Those songs live forever because they represented a time and place that transcended the actual, civil unrest, the civil abuse. They represented a time, and we sing, "We Shall Overcome." Music pushed me to play in spite of the objectivity of the church. And they were coming to shut me down because I was going the wrong way. People left the church because of the music I was playing. The church split, and I had to rebuild the church through the grace of God. I had to rebuild the church. So again, I'm going off on a tangent, Rick, but this is music emboldened me to rise above the incidents that discouraged me, just like George Floyd. History will have a way of through musical interpretation of making this event to be momentous.